Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hey, guys. You may know me. Come on, of course you know me. You listen to my damn podcast, but guess what? I got another venture, Hardcore Cafe. That's right. Owned and trademarked by myself. And I love it because you all know how much I love coffee. Well, that's right. Tommy Dreamer is taking caffeine to the extreme. Go to richportcoffee.com or you could go to houseofhardcore.net. You can find all the links on my social medias to get the best coffee you've ever tasted. And that's my Tommy Dreamer guarantee. And if you don't like it, I will come to your house and Singapore cane you till you do like it. So please go out there and try my latest business venture, Hardcore Cafe. Taking caffeine to the extreme.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, your host for the House of Hardcore podcast, Tommy Dreamer.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the House of Hardcore podcast. I'm your host, Tommy Dreamer, and this week I got a special guest, someone I've known for a very, very long time, Taylor Wilde. How are you, my friend?
Hi, Wrestling Dad.
It's so nice to see you. You look amazing.
I'm great. Oh, thank you.
Thought something happened to my internet there. I thought it froze. Did I freeze?
No, it skipped for me, too.
Okay. There's internet. The other day I was on a Zoom call. I spend my life on Zoom, which I'm not complaining because, it's an easier way to make a living. Sure. But everything crashed. Zoom crashed. That's not good for when the world we have to communicate.
Agreed. Yeah.
So hopefully it doesn't happen. And if you ever notice, whenever we get frozen, it's the worst possible freeze.
Everyone looks. Yeah. I'm into it. It's cool.
All right. So I ask everybody this question. What got you hooked in the wonderful world of professional wrestling?
So the real truth, I guess it's two part, is there wasn't a lot of wrestling growing up in my house. My mom was like, no wrestling, no Jerry Springer, no married children, all things I later loved. She's a good mom for wrestling. And he always got the pay-per-views. He would like buy chairs from WWE, big pay-per-views, like the VIP seating. And so that was when I was younger. And then, in my formative teen years, it was actually my boyfriend who was really into the Attitude Era, really big into the whole Edge and Christian Hardy Boys feud when Trish Stratus was queen. And that was my introduction, really, to what wrestling was as like a pseudo adult. And I thought, I'm going to university for kinesiology. I was going to jump on that personal training era when everyone was making big bucks. That's not the case anymore. And I had played competitive, high-level contact sports my whole life. And there's only a limited amount of sports in which women can make money. And they're usually the sports where women are scantily clad, although that is changing. And it was like all the stars aligned. I had met a local Ontario independent wrestler, found a really good reputable school, and kind of that was the starting point when I was 17.
That's when you started training?
That's when I started training, yeah.
Wow. With who?
So originally it was Ron Hutchinson who trained all the big names, but it was at the very tail end. He had like a right-hand guy doing his training. It was more his name. His school closed in 6 months. And then I was over to Rob Fuego at Squared Circle, who's also very ingrained in all the Canadians who everyone might know.
Yes. Total sidebar. Have you ever talked to that ex-boyfriend that got you involved in it, because he's like, oh my God, look what I could have been.
You know what? I hadn't, but you know, just you get down the deep dive of everyone's social media when you shouldn't, you know, checking up on exes. And kind of when I was at the peak of my TNA career, I noticed he had just thrown up a photo of me when I was 17 on his Facebook. And I was like,
gotcha, you son of a bitch.
Totally. And he like, he was my first real boyfriend. I was like 16. He was my first, and he cheated on me and like totally broke my heart and like, you know, went through all that stuff. And it was like a really good moment where I was like,
that's
look
awesome.
What you could have had.
Who was your favorite growing up?
Trish and Jeff Hardy and Rey Mysterio. Top three right off the top of my head.
Those are three great. Also, total sidebar, if you would have found out who your ex's favorite wrestler is and then took a picture with that person.
That would have been really good, too.
How you get back, future generation of wrestlers, how you could get back at your ex's episode of the House of Hardcore podcast.
I feel like it's a niche that needs to be fulfilled.
All right. So now at a very young age, and also you said it earlier about dress and being scantily clad. You yeah. grew up in that generation, that era. Kudos to your mom to try to suppress all that stuff. And trust me, I get it all the time. We're like, I wasn't allowed to watch ECW. But like I snuck in and I watched it and it was so cool. Oh, right. That attitude era was just for, there's a whole generation that just won't understand what they watched on television, but we grew up on it. We were hooked yeah. on it. But you also named that other, that was television then, Jerry Springer, all these like in your show faces that were just totally nuts. And wrestling, of course, is going to be that.
Yeah.
How at like 17, like, I mean, also, I don't know about Canada, but I know the States, you're underage, you're traveling and you're having to wear, because this is what we think is the norm going on. Like, how was that for you at such a young, impressionable age?
Yeah. I think about this because when I on my own podcast, Wild On, I talk to a lot of up and coming young ladies, and you know, I'm like, how are you staying so grounded? How are you not getting involved in all the, you know, the darkness that is
yep.
any entertainment business, be it drugs, partying, sex, whatever. I think my mom and my dad, they separated when I was young, but they knew what they had with me, and it was like a hyperactive child who like always shot for the stars, and I was never going to be normal. And they learned really early on with me, the more you tell me no, the more I'm going to do something. So they really just supported what I did. I always had an open line of communication with them. Like if I was dabbling in any other extracurricular substances, and I was never punished for it. It was always like, okay, you're safe, you're home. So I always felt like I had this really open line of communication with my parents, where I never had to hide anything. I was never told I couldn't do anything. And as a result, my wrestling was always really supported. It was just it was like, you know, stay in school, please get an education. We're not going to stop you because you're going to go anyways. So it would be better if you just checked in. And like, you know, when I started, there was no Skype, there was no FaceTime. I remember going to Mexico, not speaking a lick of Spanish, and getting a calling card that was like a receipt that had like 400 numbers on it, to then go to a payphone and like figure out this fucking algebraic equation to call home. And another thing was, I think starting so young, instead of going into like the darkness, and it's not darkness for everybody, but like the drugs, partying, rock and roll, I felt like I always kind of fit into this more kid sister role. And I don't know if I wasn't like so overtly sexual, like, you know, I didn't have implants when I started, and I wasn't the biggest, loudest, blondest person in the room. I was just like this athlete who wanted to wrestle. And I felt like I was befriended by the guys rather than sexualized. And I think that really carried throughout my career, even into common day, where like I'm a full-time professional firefighter, and I've never had those kind of issues. And it's not because I'm ignorant to them, because don't get me wrong, I'm you know, growing up in this business, my street smarts are pretty switched on. But I really just feel like, I don't know if it was a respect thing or it was an ageist thing, but I really just kind of stayed in this kid sister sort of role where,
You said something important as well. For me, it was exactly that era. Like if you didn't do drugs, you were looked at like different. And I mean, even today, people have offered me drugs. I'm like, I've never done cocaine. And like, really? You were in ECW. And I was just like, yeah, no, never did it. But then it also, you know, I don't want to say it goes to your upbringing, but it's personal choice.
Yeah.
And I had Tony Atlas who told me like, hey, kid, I made $1 million and I blew it all on drugs and alcohol and don't do that. Or like, just wasn't my gig. But then like you said, it like viewed as an outsider, but if you stuck to who you really are and your own core values, it really did help you in any type of business. And the other thing you said, I just had this conversation with my daughters who were going to go to college and we were going for a walk, a nature walk. This was yesterday. And I said, hey, girls, I need this for my own well-being. Can you just text me every night when you're not at the house and just be like, we're in safe.
Yeah.
And my both daughters agreed. And they go, did you do that with your parents? And I said, you know, at one point I had to go to Japan for 6 weeks. And I said, I called my parents once a week. As a parent, I never realized how hard that was.
Oh, right.
But cell phones weren't available and you had to get this. And I explained exactly what you said. I had to get a calling card that I didn't understand, or like I had to get a Japanese calling card and have someone dial this number so I could talk to my parents. Cause long distance, if I called long distance, I think my father would have been madder at me than I did for calling on a calling card. And I said, I call grandma every day. And I do. I call my mother every day. Wow. And then I'm also like, and if text messaging was around, I would text my mother or just tell my mother like, good night. I love her. I'm safe. And I was like, my rule was like when I was a young kid, you were out all day up until dark and then you made sure you were home. And then weirdly, you could be 2 miles away. But if you heard your parents yell your name, you ran home.
Yep.
And then the other version, like if I told, because I was bouncing at 18 years old, just like you, I was wrestling at 18 years old. If I told my parents, I'll be home at 2:30 because the club ends at 2:00. And like by the time I leave, and I knew if I was late, I would either call or, and I drove home and I saw my kitchen light on. I'm like, oh, I know I'm in trouble because it's 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And I would tell my dad, well, dad, there were some girls. And he's like, that's it. I don't want to know. Don't tell your mother. Done. So, but it is, it's different times, but I mean, communicating and just telling me, like I'm home is different. Yeah. Also, the other thing you made me laugh of where you're like, I was this hyperactive child. I've known you as this hyperactive adult. So, I know what's changed, but it's pretty funny when you said that.
I'm pretty true blue. Like I'm consistent. I'm to the point now where I'm like, I wonder if I should go get an adult diagnosis, but what would it matter?
You are awesome and your energy is great. And I'm so happy that we got to reconnect because I always appreciated you and your energy. So now you're doing these Canadian indies and traveling all the world. And what do you feel is your first break, or am I your first break?
You were definitely my first break. Yeah. You gave me my career 100%. You were the catalyst because before there was the changing of the guards and John Laurinaitis had your position. I was not John Laurinaitis's cup of tea. I will never be because I wasn't a diva at that time. I wasn't a model. And as I am to this day, I'm not okay, this is going to sound shady, but this is the God honest truth, especially during that era when they were bringing a lot of models in. I didn't come from that world. I came from an athletic background. I'm a tomboy. I'm not good at flirting. I'm not good at kissing ass. And so when you took that position, it was finally like, oh my God, someone who's like my kind of people is in that role. And yeah, you gave me my career, really. If it wasn't for you, I would have never I don't think ever left the Indies.
Well, thank you for that. And you are another one of my many prized finds. But, and I want to say it was through a VCR tape.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
Couple of, you know what I believe it was. So Edge and Christian were always kind of cycling through Squared Circle because they came up in the business with my trainer Rob Fuego.
Yep.
And I think it was Jay, and he was like, you know, he had a conversation with Rob that, you know, I was probably at that time he would give his stamp of approval, and I think he was the one that probably gave you the nudge, because you know, so many people apply with their VHS tapes and their 8x10s and they end up in the garbage. But I believe it was Jay who kind of helped me out there.
And I remember watching you, and just like, you know, I like people that your wrestling will always, no matter what, always get me interested. And I remember like when I first saw Lita or when I first saw Jazz, and I was like, man, these people are good, but they're different. And for you, because specifically for that era, like I was told, like I had to look for models or they were looking for women who like weren't really wanting to be wrestlers or wrestlers, and then throw them into this mix. But then I was like, I have this girl who's an amazing wrestler. And like, I remember like, and like you said, you didn't have boobs. You were an amazing wrestler, and I was happy I was able to, we all need an assist in our life. And same with a Beth Phoenix, who, I mean, I remember I had to tell Beth, hey man, they want you to streamline your physique because they feel like you're too big or like for you. And this is a real deal. Like your worst attribute was you were such a good wrestler.
Honestly, to this day, I just saw Scott at a show, and sorry not to cut you off, but I just saw Scott at a Toronto show, and he said, you know, he said just that verbatim, your biggest hindrance is your wrestling. And I'm like, but it's so confusing.
If I could use like another sports reference, you're such a good pitcher, we can't use you. But like, I could like win a Cy Young, I could win the World Series for you. Nah. We're going to find somebody else. But that's what this poor woman and to all these people listening had to go through, to the point. And kudos to Dean Malenko, because then I was able to hire her. And, you know, this is another big move for you. You're moving from Canada to Deep South wrestling in McDonough, Georgia. Whole other cultural shock. How old were you when I hired you?
Well, this is the biggest kick in the ass, because at 19 you can legally drink in Canada, and I just turned 20.
Oh, I totally do remember this. Also, getting a rental car, you couldn't do all this.
Fucking America.
Yeah. So you were so good and always excelling, and like myself, the wrestlers, you know, Bill DeMott, Jody Hamilton are always like, she's so good. Like she can outwork all these. And again, this era was the diva era. Yeah. And same with Jazz, man. If Jazz came along today, Jazz would probably be main eventing WrestleMania. And it's wrong place, wrong time. But like Jazz was talked down upon because of how good she was in the ring.
Yeah.
And same for you and Dean Malenko. And this happened / almost happened. Dean Malenko came up with the idea of, let's put a mask on you and make her wrestle as a male masked wrestler. And then eventually, and this was actually a great idea, if this happened now, I think WWE would be canceled because they were hiring a female's identity. And the whole time you had to be like, I'm a guy. And then until whoever that person was unmasks you, and it's like, oh my gosh, this is a female, like this great wrestler. And they're like, you were spoken about, which is also kudos to you, in the grain of a Rey Mysterio, a Jeff Hardy, like all this stuff. And I remember like you had done all these different gimmicks, and then they're like, this was her biggest attribute. She's a female. And then it was Dean was like, well, then let's friggin' just put a mask on her and hide her identity because she's so good. But like, think of that. It's absurd.
But you know what? Thank you so much for validating that story, because I lived it.
Yeah.
People don't fucking believe me.
Yeah.
God. And you know what? The other element to that, because it was so abstract and outside the box and taboo for that time, they didn't want anyone in developmental to know about it either. So I was not allowed to train in the Sabu pants, the oversized kick pads, the double meshed eyes and mouth. And so the only time I got to train was when Jamie Noble and I had, I think, two or three dark matches before SmackDown. And it was abysmal because, like, I'm in this oversized shit. I didn't get to train in it. When you've wrestled your whole career with complete 360 vision, and then you're in a double meshed eye and mouth, like, oh, and the mask was too big, and it was a nightmare. But like, what an experience. Like, right. Truthfully, even just having those dark matches was really a testament to, like, okay, someone does believe in me, but it didn't work out.
You had a lot of people believing you. And when you just said that, I totally had a flashback of you taking off that mask after your match and be like, oh, like, wow. I love how my brain like gets triggered of these events. And that's why I love doing this podcast, because it's not only just reconnecting with people. Then I was like, the things that I like, that, like you said, like, you're happy that I'm validating this, because yeah, it was true and it happened. There's video footage of it somewhere.
Somewhere. Please don't bring it up. Please, no one rehash it. I'm still not over the trauma.
And also, like, during the time, you know, I'm watching, you know, the DX documentary, and when China comes out and she grabs Terry Runnels, the one line that JR said that I was like, if that line was said today, he'd be done. Where it was just like, is that a man or a woman? And like, she's right. But that, at first, that was kind of like China's thing. Like,
totally. You were
like, there's no way this woman could be this big or so strong. And they played up to that. Kudos to like Sean and Hunter for going with that. And they didn't understand that ever. And it was Shane who was like, this is great, and this is the heat.
Right.
And for you, it's like, yes. And you said it the best. It didn't work out, but thankfully something else did. And I don't remember how or when, and I'm sure you do, that WWE let you go.
You know, I some people are really fantastic with dates. I'm not.
Okay.
But it was pretty much like at that year mark. And at that time in developmental, if you had made it a year and you weren't doing anything, then they let you go. So it was one of those quarters where there was a bunch of releases. And it was funny because I had like a sit down meeting with Vince, like one-on-one. He loved the idea. Like, Dean supported it. You supported it. Jamie Noble was fucking amazing. Like, he, like, what a wrestler, what a human being, and no ego in it whatsoever. Like, yeah. He didn't care. He was just like, you know, this is good for business. This is, you know, it is what it is. But there was ego involvement at the end, and for whatever reason, it didn't come to fruition, probably because I was basically wrestling in like one of those T-Rex blow up costumes. Like, it might as well have been. But yeah, it didn't work out. And and then it was back to university for me. I thought, fuck it, I'll go be normal. I'll go back to school.
You said another interesting thing about time, like Jamie Noble had no ego to lose to a woman. And now, like, that sounds so insane. But back then, people would think that's career suicide, or like, and that was another hang up. Like, well, all these wrestlers that she beat in the past, it's going to hurt them. I'm like, really? Like, people forget about what happened last week. And it's this big thing. I mean, it really was like an idea of women empowerment, which has now been like the whole thing for a long, long time. But just timing is everything. And just, I don't think the business was ready for something like that. Yeah. And I knew it because I used to watch Jazz wrestle men. It made total sense. They would beat people out. She was my tag partner. And it was just, everything made sense. And also like, oh yeah, by the way, this is not real.
Right.
Anything can happen, especially in the WWE universe, you know?
And the sad thing was too, it was like, you know, Jamie and I were making the matches make sense based on the fact that I was going to be revealed as a woman. It's not like it was even keel baby to baby or heel face. It wasn't like wrestling 101. We were making it make sense to build to something. But like you said, that era, those egos, where women were in the pecking order in wrestling in the world, yep. It just, I so badly wanted to be that person to kick it over the other side, but I can only do so much. And I was really fucking young. Like, I don't have any regrets, but I wish I would have said something to the right people. Would it have made a difference? Probably not. But, I was so Canadian. So like, yes, sir. No, sir. Okay, great. Thank you.
Apologizing. Thank you for thinking I wrestle so good, sir. Thank you. I apologize for not being a good wrestler. I mean, for being a really good wrestler.
For not having bigger boobs at the time. I apologize. But yeah, you know what? And I just can't help but think there's no regrets. There's only like, my God, my early 20s were badass. Like, yeah. What a time I had. But, you can't fight the universe. And, you know, it's the journey, man. Like, yep. I am where I am now because I went through that. And I'm in like such a cool place with wrestling, and women's wrestling is in such a good place. And like, I'm not 26 anymore, but 36 is really different than 26 was 10 years ago. So I don't feel like I've missed anything. If anything, I feel like I'm probably in a better place mentally and physically for the wrestling world than 20-year-old yes sir, no sir was. Cause that doesn't really work in wrestling.
Absolutely. And if this was the 80s, you'd be primed to hold the world title in every organization. Cause 36 is, your prime. It really is.
Yeah.
All right. So you get let go, you're going to go to university, and then opportunity knocks again for you.
Yeah. So I went back to school. I was like, okay, well, kinesiology, kind of over it. Go back for psychology. I've re-enrolled, bought all my books, probably 6 months into my semester, and TNA calls. And
specifically Scott D'Amore?
Scott. Yeah, it was Scott. And I've known Scott since I was 17. I was wrestling for his BCW promotion in Windsor, Ontario. 16, 17 years old, probably like 17, no, sorry. Yeah. 17, 18 years old, excuse me. And I always had a really good working relationship with him. And he just basically said like, we've hired all these women. We've got a really good thing going on with TNA. We're trying to build up our women's division. Would you like to come for a tryout? And I did, and it went really well. And I was hired on the spot, but then there was a little bit of, would you be interested in moving to the States? And I was like, no, I just moved my ass back home. I'm grounded with my family and my friends. Like, I've had the same group of four girlfriends since I was 6 years old. And I really think like kind of digging my heels in that moment and staying home and staying with my family and friends has like kept me grounded, like for the trajectory of my career, like never kind of falling off my morals or anything like that. So they were good. They said, okay, well, fine. We'll fly out of Toronto. Cost them a little extra, but we weren't making millions. So yeah.
Plus you got to get a visa.
And the visa and the.
Internally also in WWE, Canadians had internal heat because we had to pay you more money than regular US people. Cause you have to say, why do these people, you, what was it? I used to have to fill out so many forms. You have a unique talent, quality, yes, ability over hiring a foreigner than to coming into, why wouldn't I just hire an American wrestler? And then we had to pay you guys more money than we had to pay an American. So, well, it was well worth it in my opinion. Also, it wasn't my money.
You know what? I felt like I would get heat the odd time from like an American TSA agent, like not nowadays, but back then it was kind of like, well, why are you so special? Like, hello, is this not it?
Whether you're driving an old classic or a real piece of junk, the car market is hot. And that's why I want to tell you about rockauto.com, the one-stop shop for all auto parts you need to keep your car on the road and in pristine condition. Rockauto.com has been in business for over 20 years. And they've had every part you need in stock at amazing prices. No reason to run around to different stores, websites, or auto shops. Rock Auto has what you need in stock. And guess what? RockAuto.com prices are always reliably low. That means they do not change prices based upon what's going on in the market. This isn't like an airplane ticket, a hotel, or beef at the grocery store. Have you seen the price of beef lately? You won't need to constantly check to see what you need is available and if now is the best time to buy. Rock Auto keeps it simple and has everything in stock at reliably low prices. So go to rockauto.com. They make it easy to maintain your car and save money. It feels good knowing your car is in top condition. Once more, rockauto.com for great prices on auto parts, and tell them we sent you right here on the House of Hardcore podcast. There's a box when you check out to put it in our show name. And that's the House of Hardcore podcast. The prices are too good for promo codes. Now let's get back into the show. You debut in TNA. I remember being super duper happy, but what was your first, did you have a first gimmick or you just came in?
I was in the audience as a fan, and I was the little Mighty Mouse in the audience who decided to partake in Awesome Kong's $25,000 challenge to take on the Beast.
I totally do remember all this.
And it was mad heat backstage, but it was like, I mean that in the sense that, so I walk in and this Gail had just stepped down from being TNA Super Babyface because she was going back to WWE at the time. And between Gail and Scott, they decided that they were selecting me to fill Gail's kind of like the path she had started to blaze, basically. And so they knew that I was coming in as this fan and I was going to beat Awesome Kong. I was going to be the first knockout to pin Awesome Kong and win this $25,000 challenge. And then in my second vision of the TNA world, basically like my second taping, I was then TNA knockout. And then there had been so many knockouts that had been there for years that had known me for years from the indies. But you know how that works. Yeah. Like, these are my girls, sure, but like they want what I want. And Kia's Awesome Kong is just like, she was so old school in her way. It wasn't like, hey girl, let's have this great match, let's put this shit together. She basically like totally iced me out and ignored me a lot. And we would just talk about the match. And it was basically like, sink or swim, girl. If this match goes well, then we're homies. Otherwise, get the fuck away from me, because she was protecting the locker room that she had already built. And thank God I swam. Yes.
A lot of people don't understand that either or realize that, because that was, again, that era where, number one, the competitiveness in wrestling and the protectiveness, I don't want to say for your spot, but you said it, for the locker room, because it's like, who's this new girl coming in that's going to get the rocket pushed? Yeah. If you really do think about it, it's wrong heat on the person, because it's not like you picked that spot.
Right.
It's more heat on management, but the boys don't go after management that way.
No. So shoot the messenger, basically.
Yeah, basically. I never thought of it like that.
Like, cool. Okay. Just happy to be here and I'll go eat shit over there. Okay.
And it trust me, it's happened from, and it still happens. I see it all the time. But I mean, I remember the Dudleys wanted to beat the crap out of Joel Gertner, who was their manager, because he was making more money than them.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was like, go beat the crap out of Paul Heyman, because he was the one who gave him that money.
Yeah.
And then they're like, well, we're bleeding every night. We're having these matches. Okay. Still go blame Paul Heyman. Don't pick on that poor kid, because hey, good for him to get it.
Oh, well, that's it. And that's kind of my mentality always. I never felt like jealous, or I never felt vindictive towards any other woman in the business, because I thought, this is good for business. Like, let's elevate each other. We're already the minority, so let's like band together. But it took a long time to get to that place. And don't get me wrong, women are always going to be women. We have hormones. Like, there's always going to be cattiness.
So will men, dear.
That's true. It's just different. It's, you know, testosterone versus estrogen. We deal with emotions. You guys are more polarized. But yeah, you know, it all worked out. But wrestling, women's wrestling is in a good place now. But that has more to do with HR and the pendulum. You know, the pendulum was in a bad place before, but now I think it's swung too far the other way. We need to get back to like a middle ground. But it is still a really exciting time in women's wrestling, especially talent-wise.
For that period, do you have a favorite moment in your career there?
Oh, boy. probably that debut match where I beat.
That's awesome.
Yeah, because that was the moment that made my career, and it was the match was great, but my promo was so cringy. So it's like, you know, my mic skills have always been something to be desired, but that's, you know, also like my confidence, and I felt like I had been kicked down so much for just being who I was, and I wasn't living authentically. Like I was living authentically being this athlete wrestler, but I wasn't me. I was always holding back who I was. And that's the difference between being 36, twice divorced, and a mother and a firefighter. And now I'm like, you know what? You don't like me. I don't care. I'm just going to be me.
Listen, and it's also like a learning experience, as well as you also in an environment. I'm currently watching Bret Hart on Stone Cold's Broken Sessions. Mm-hmm. And Bret says, like, WCW beat me down. Like, I could not care about professional wrestling ever again. He goes, and something that I was born into, something that I loved. And because, you know who told me, like, if I went to WCW, I would hate it, wrestling? He goes, it was Kevin Nash and you, Steve. And Steve's like, I don't remember that. He goes, yeah. He goes, and then I remember when Goldust, after he left WWF, he went to WCW, and he was just like, I just want to have great matches. And he goes, I just said to him, he's just like, it doesn't matter. And he goes, and this is coming from Bret Hart, you know, the guy who told these amazing stories, cared about everything, but it was like the atmosphere beat him down.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that happens. And that also then goes to mental health, all that stuff.
Yes.
Okay. So then you pretty much, and I can't believe how young you still are, by the way. I mean, you look amazing, but like,
thank you.
I don't want to say, like, if you really think about this, I'm your age when I'm hiring you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I'm looking at you and I'm like, I mean, you don't look 36 years old, but I'm also like, how have I known her for so long? And like, oh my God, she was that old, like when I hired her. And like,
yeah, that's crazy.
It all just comes to fruition. But if you really do think about it, because I'm like, I'm seriously, I'm sitting in that office chair looking at your VCR. I'm your age.
That's
and I'm
crazy.
Looking, watching this and like, hey, this girl has something, but it's just very, very cool.
Isn't that like full cycle or like, like real synchronicity?
I wish it was on this exact date.
So I know. Let's pretend it is. We'll go with that.
So you leave TNA.
Yep.
And you leave the business.
Yeah. So I had this plan. This like unwritten plan in my head. I said, if I'm not rolling in it, or my career isn't in a place where I have full security, and this is TNA was, this was at a time that salaries were not an option. Like no one had salaries. You got paid when you were booked. And what people don't understand is you're not booked unless you're written in the storyline. And unless you're, you know, in the writer's face, or you're a creative yourself, or anyone gives a shit about what you say, you just dwindle, and then you're not.
That's also a big reason fighting for the top spot.
Yes, exactly.
Yep.
So I said to myself, by 25, if I'm not in a position where I'm secure, and I'm like happy and loving it, then I'm going to retire. And not like I'm going to retire for 6 months. I'm going to retire. And I was pretty burnt out by the time I was 25, because I was really fortunate. I started training basically at 17, and under 2 years, I was hired by WWE. So I had been hitting it hard since I was, you know, 17 and 25. Like that's, you know, that's a good stretch. And I feel really blessed and fortunate for having that stretch. And it was really controversial to leave at 25.
As well as, I don't mean to cut you off, but I need to state this. Like when you say doing it hard, when you're in the developmental system, you, number one, are being judged every day. Number two, you're in the ring for hours. You also then have to go to the gym. You also have to, you know, perform on their shows, but it is like hitting it hard. You're devoted, your entire life is about professional wrestling, as well as it's, you're doing this every day. Like, and I don't want to say it takes its toll on your body, but like how you said, yeah, man, 25 is, I always say like ECW, like aged you in dog years. So like I was there 8 years. So that's an equivalent of like forever, 8 times 7, 56. And it's just like, I went in there as a, when I went into ECW, I was in my 20s. I left there. I'm still in my 20s. And like, I was 29 when that company went out of business, and I'm this seasoned vet because of all the things that you've seen and done, and God knows how many bumps you take. But if you're in developmental, you're taking possibly 100 bumps a day.
Yeah, it developmental took a real toll on me mentally and physically, right, especially during that time.
Because you're being evaluated every second of your life. You're being judged.
Yeah. And during that era, you couldn't get away with it now, or they style it a little bit different, right, or frame it different. But like, we were weighing in every week. And if you gained weight, you had to explain why. I'm like, I don't know, I ate a fucking burrito. Like, back off. Yeah. But, you know, like, and you're already not mentally healthy with diet, because back then it wasn't like now. Women's fitness is in this, like, fit is the new skinny. Like, it is sexy to be muscular. Back then, I was fighting against my natural body. I was just trying to get smaller and skinnier. And like, I am little and heavy and muscular. Like, I am a Polish, like, stump puller. Like, I am like, like, my body was meant to do what I do. But I was fighting against it. And, right. So I was, oh God, I've probably gotten completely away from the point, but it was, aside from the mental anguish that you endured in developmental, the physical anguish, being on the road since I was 18 years old, I was like a complete nomad. I stayed home around my family and in Toronto, but I wasn't making any meaningful connections in terms of what all us heterosexual beings need. Right. And, you know, I was dating within the wrestling world, which was really fucking faux pas for that time, which is ridiculous. Because if you dated a woman's wrestler, you good. If I dated a male wrestler, we all know what that meant. Mm-hmm. And now we're in a place where it's very normal. Like, you only know that world. It's all encompassing. It's like when surgeons date each other, it takes over your whole life. And you have to have this understanding of what your schedule is, what your life is. So I was just burnt out on, like, I couldn't have been more burnt out. And my contract was like near an end. And I also felt that I reached this point in my career where wrestling was, there was literally nothing else for me to do. I had done all the things that I could do. And I think I was also like, I had a really good 3-year run, 4-year run with me and Kia doing this like female version of Goliath and,
right,
you know,
David,
thank you. Shift work brain. And yeah, it was just, that was it. I was done. I left and I got a lot of flack for it.
It's all right. Total sidebar, you know, when I'm glad you got to realize that at 25, you know, when I got to realize, that I have never been home, the pandemic.
No.
And I had been on the road since I was 20.
Jesus.
And I want to say that's 2 years ago. So 28 years.
Wow.
And I also always, and I've been on the road nonstop since I'm 20. And I always thought like, and you said it before, and like, you're saying things and I'm like, whoa, maybe this is why we're so tight. But like, it's, I never realized I could be normal.
Yes.
And it's a weird thing when you look at yourself and you're like, wait, I am a homebody when I'm off the road.
Yeah.
But then it's like, no, wait, I could do this. Like, I could like even maybe get a real job like one day, just like, instead of like, I don't know. It's just something that, and I, during the pandemic, like that's when I realized all this. Like, I grew up at 48 when and you're growing up now at 28. So it's kudos to you to realize that and to stick to your plan. And then you move away again.
Yeah. So I
like, because this is when I like kind of re-first connect with you via social media.
Yeah. So I retired from wrestling. I went back to school, but I gave up on my psych degree because it was useless. I wasn't going to work in a lab. I didn't actually want to be a physician. And I decided that I still have an adrenaline junkie, but one of my favorite things I did in WWE was do Make-A-Wish and work with the vulnerable communities. So I thought, okay, emergency services would be a really good fit for me. Cop, paramedic, or firefighter. I went to a bunch of information nights, realized, okay, and this is no shade, but paramedics are more nerdy. They're like really, they're academics. Cops, I don't love the law. Let's just leave it there. And then firefighters are always the good guys. You're the one running into burning buildings when everyone's running out. And I thought that means their brains are not functioning on like all levels. So I was like, you know, those are my people. And I also, you never know what you're going to do in a day as a firefighter. So I went and I did the schooling. And then when I finished, there was like an emergency services lockout and they weren't hiring anybody for about a year. So I had met a guy on the like last leg of my TNA career. He lived in England and we got pretty serious, but we were going between countries every month, every 2 months to sustain this relationship. And then when I retired from wrestling, I got married and then I moved to England for a year. And it didn't work out, the marriage, nor living in England. But we were young and dumb, and I threw myself into it thinking, I want normality. This guy is really different than me. He worked in the music industry, and so he had an understanding of life on the road and right. whatever. It was a good fit, knew nothing about wrestling or very limited. And
plus, they drive on the wrong side of the road. Yeah. They have beans for breakfast. What is this? I got to get out of here.
The sun never comes out. It's fucking brutal. Talk about seasonal depression. And yeah, so then I came home. You know, if I saw him tomorrow, I'd be so happy to see him. He's a great guy. We were great friends. We were just young and stupid and threw ourselves into something that we had no business doing. Really cheap, easy divorce as well. And then it took me 4 years to get hired, but then I became a Toronto firefighter full time. And that's what I've done for 8 years. Within that time, I decided to get married again. Selected wrong again for numerous different reasons. Had a beautiful, amazing baby boy, which is by far the coolest thing I've ever done. The divorce was really horrible. I'm still going through it. However, it is the best worst thing to ever happen to me because it is the first time, like a lot of us break, right? And you can hit rock bottom. And I've hit rock bottom probably or pretty close to it a few times for numerous reasons, career, love, whatever. But this time I really hit rock bottom. And it was the first time that I was really able to say, okay, you know what? It's really easy to blame everybody else for your shortcomings as a person. It's really easy to be like, well, he was a narcissist and this is why it happened, or he cheated on me. But here I am at the time, 35, COVID. What is the piece in me that I keep attracting and letting these people into my life? What is it within myself that I haven't healed? So it was the first time that I really stopped throwing myself into relationships to find happiness, to do the inner, really scary, really dark work with myself and heal and really figure out what fucking childhood bullshit and all that psychological stuff that we all talk about. What is it? And it was scary and it was really hard. And I'm so fucking glad I did it. And I'm so glad I hit rock bottom because I have boundaries now. I have self-worth. I'm happy, like truly happy. And I get to be a better parent and a better woman and a better mother and a mentor and someone that I know my son can look up to because I know what a healthy relationship is now. And I'm glad I did it while my son was young because he'll only ever know what this is. But more so, I've got the rest of my life ahead of me. Like, sure, it took me until I was 36. But yeah, it's been a really, you know, COVID really kicked a lot of people in the teeth for different reasons. But I'm really thankful COVID happened because it made me do the work on myself that I was never able to do before.
Man, you and I are going to have separate text message chains on all this because this is such a deep dive. No, seriously, you have no clue. But if you really think about it, too, it's a 10-year period between where you have these different revelations about your life. And if you could go back to this in 10 years, because you're going to be a much different person as well. But the fact that you're happy, healthy, you're glowing. I look at you as soon as I see you, I've been smiling pretty much this entire podcast, as well as like, and I talked about this and it's your energy. You have a light about you, and you always have. And I always saw it. That's why I always believed in you, but you need that. And any person listening to this, they need that. Yeah. So I'm happy that you're able to find that. And I always say, and cause I have people who hate their spouse, like, and I'd be like, don't you have a beautiful child? And you already described him as beautiful. And like, so no matter what hatred, no matter how bad it was, something good came out of that.
Yeah.
So reflect about that and also project that, because that's what's most important. So that is super duper cool. Lastly, your comeback.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. And for those, you are still under contract and you have, I mean, think about too, if you have two people who are right place, right time, myself and Scott DeMore, who do a lot behind the scenes. I mean, Scott is Impact Wrestling. Yeah. Two of the people who believed in you the most are kind of helping with this company, and you had to take your own time to settle everything. And it's like, now it's right place, right time. And it's all about the journey. And for you, it's also about the comeback.
Yes.
And, you know, it's funny. You also mentioned that show you just saw Scott at, because from that show, I talked to him. And he was like, yes, you know, seen Chantel, blah, blah, blah. We have to get her back on the field. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yes, we do. And then, but it's always like, okay, well, we can't just rush people in because you know this. All right. Well, we have these people coming in, a lot of stuff, but he was like, God, she's so frigging good. Like still. And like, but we're not talking to you like you're a 55 grizzled old, you know, Tommy Dreamer, even though I'm 51. But what I'm saying is it's, man, she like, we can't wait to get you back on the field. So I hope that happens super duper soon for you, because you're the best version of yourself, and every other day it should be the best version of yourself.
Oh, thank you. And I'm so excited. Like, it's been a year, and you know, it was hard because I had this like big comeback after 10 years of being inactive, and then COVID and divorce and life. And thank God for my Impact Wrestling family. Like, truthfully, you know, if I didn't have the history with the business, and I didn't have the relationships I have with you and Scott, there probably would have never been a part two. But again, everything happens for a reason. And this, you know, disconnect between times is, you know, surely really confusing for the fans, but it's nowhere near confusing for the fans as it has been for fucking over here. And
yeah. But I mean, that's another thing, like fan, I mean, everyone in our current state, everyone's talking about AEW and all the turmoil, all that stuff. No one's talking about the wrestling.
Right.
And there's a lot of great wrestling going on for people don't like, and I saw it like all speculation, where the hell you been, all this stuff, even though you have your own podcast, all that stuff. And I know you're very, very open, but it's also like, okay, well, this person's real life is being affected, and maybe wrestling isn't the greatest thing right now.
Yeah.
And, but your connections with people and the fact that you said, hey, you have your same six friends that you grew up with that has kept you grounded. You have the same person who gave you your first break and the same person who gave you your second break, and they have influence, and they're like, well, she's still there and she's still friggin' awesome. And you have that. And every person listening to this, if you're an independent wrestler, you need that support system. And it's the people you meet in life along the way that are going to, I will be in your corner forever. And unless you turned on me, I will be in your corner forever. And I know Scott will be that too. Scott's the most loyalist person I've ever friggin' seen towards anybody.
100%.
And I'm pretty damn loyal, but he's very, very loyal.
Agreed.
So I'm happy that I've got to reconnect with you, especially on this show, but it's also like that you're in the best place. And then I can't wait for your light to shine again for the world to see, because you are a light.
Thanks, Tommy.
You're
welcome. I love you.
I love you too. How do fans get to love you as well? What are your socials? What are you doing besides rushing in, saving people's lives, putting out fires, being a mom? What else you do?
So on Twitter and Instagram, it's Real Taylor Wilde. You can listen to my podcast. We drop a new episode every Wednesday because we get wild on Wednesdays. It's on YouTube and it's on any major podcast platform. So wherever you enjoy listening to podcasts, I do have a TikTok. Just Google it. It's not Real Taylor Wilde. Someone stole it. It's Taylor Wilde. There's only one account out there. So yeah, that's it.
Well, that's, I can't wait for part two plus or two asterisk comeback. And I can't wait to see you again. I know it's going to be soon. And thank you for listening. I love you too. And thank you everyone for listening to the House of Hardcore podcast with the greatest Taylor Wilde.